like that. You want to try that.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another exciting, exhilarating, learned episode of the Logan Blattman Show. I hope you all have had a fantastic week up until this point and are excited for another great episode of your favorite show that you've never listened to. But before we get into anything we're going to talk about today, let's go over the housekeeping items first. Make sure to follow the Logan Blattman Show on every single form of social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and of course, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter at Logan_Blattman. Instagram account is Blattman Logan. The show's Instagram account is The Logan Blattman Show. Same with Facebook and YouTube. Make sure to like and follow the Facebook page and subscribe to the YouTube channel. We will have some videos coming up for you here shortly. We're going to have a mock draft video, which will be a blog post there as well, which you will be able to check out on theLoganBlattmanShow.com. And then you can also go, we're going to have a video coming out later as well about our NFL preseason predictions. I have not looked at those one time, but obviously I can't look at that until after the season because I made a Super Bowl prediction. That's the only thing I really remember is is about the, the teams that I had in the Super Bowl. And for those of you who do not know who I had in the Super Bowl this year, it was, of course, the Buffalo Bills taking on the Green Bay Packers. And it wasn't just because I thought both teams were going to be very good this year, because I did. I mean, it's pretty, I don't think I deserve a pat on the back for saying that the Green Bay Packers and the Buffalo Bills would be good football teams this year. But a couple years ago, back in 2005, I had a little booklet, like an NFL booklet thing, where it had a little bracket prediction in there. The entire book, each page was dedicated to an NFL team. And it would just go by division. So AFC East, North, South, whatever. It would keep going in those divisions. And each page would be dedicated, and they have a player on there. I believe the Bills player they had on there was Willis McGahee. I don't remember all the other ones, but I would assume the Packers one was like Brett Favre. The Broncos, like Jake Plummer. Patriots, Tom Brady. And it would just keep going on. And you had this big thing at the end of it where you could predict the Super Bowl or predict the playoffs and stuff like that. And in this book, I had the Buffalo Bills taking on the Green Bay Packers. Now, the Buffalo Bills at that point in time were not a very good football team. They weren't. They were not a very good football team. So to say that they were going to go on to win a Super Bowl against a team like the Green Bay Packers is kind of crazy. But in the year 2025, going into the year 2026, it didn't seem that ridiculous, especially when you look at the fact that the Packers made a big-time move to get Micah Parsons in. Unfortunately, towards ACL, kind of derailed the whole operation and the process. But yeah, that did not happen. And I can promise you this, I did not one time think of putting the Seattle Seahawks and the New England Patriots together in the Super Bowl. There was not 1 ounce of me that thought that would happen. And I'm going to talk about that game obviously here more in a little bit, but we also have to finish out these housekeeping items first, so let's make sure to follow the Logan Blattman Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, subscribe to the YouTube channel in regards to the podcast channel. That's TLBS Podcast on YouTube. Make sure to leave a 5-star rating on both Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Doesn't need to be a 5-star rating. Obviously, I'd appreciate that more than anything else in the whole wide world. But obviously, if you don't feel the show's up to snuff, I don't want to just guilt trip you into giving me a 5-star rating. If you don't feel that it is deserving of that, I want you to be honest with me here. I want you to be honest and just let me know. Let me have it. Let me have it down in the description below. Now we're in the start time. Now we're here. Now we're live. And it's a good time. I mean, it's not a good time, actually. I'm not in a good mood. I'm not having a good time. And you want me to be 100% frank with you? It's because of the fact that I have to sit back and watch the Super Bowl matchup that I didn't really want to watch. Out of the entire AFC-NFC playoff picture, when we were previewing the AFC and NFC championship games, this was the one I did not want. And it has nothing to do with the Seattle Seahawks. I have no ill will towards the Seattle Seahawks. I have no problems with them being the Super Bowl, if I'm being honest here. And I said that when we were doing the preview show about, like, it doesn't bother me if the Seahawks make the Super Bowl. It does not bother me. The only thing that does irk me a little bit is that I'm going to have to watch Sam Darnold in the Super Bowl out of the 2018 draft class. If you would have said 2 or 3 years after the 2018 draft, let's go four years. When Sam Darnold got shipped off to Carolina and essentially lost his starting job to Baker Mayfield, when the Browns shipped him off to Carolina as well, if you would have said that Sam Darnold would be the first quarterback of the 2018 draft class, it also includes Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, I would have called you crazy that he's going to be the guy that goes to the Super Bowl first. Out of all those guys, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, that's three MVPs between them. Baker Mayfield was a dark horse MVP candidate at the beginning of the year, has been a top 10 quarterback or there around for the past 2 years now. Sam Darnold had a career resurgence last year with the Minnesota Vikings, but he was the backup quarterback to the San Francisco 49ers behind Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant. And this is a guy who was the third overall draft pick in 2018, who a lot of people out there widely considered to be the number one quarterback prospect in that draft class. And now, in a huge circle, we are all the way back around to Sam Darnold leading a team to the Super Bowl. It's just not the team that drafted him. And I'll never forget when he got drafted, I was watching Colin Cowherd, and he said that the New York Jets and the Arizona Cardinals, of all teams, who, if you don't remember, drafted Josh Rosen 10th overall in that draft, were the winners of the draft because they drafted guys that are going to save careers. Obviously, we know now that nobody on the Cardinals and nobody on the Jets held on to their careers for that long after drafting said quarterbacks, but that had a lot to do with the environments they were in, and Josh Rosen's just a cockass, and we already knew that anyways. I mean, however many Super Bowls Tom Brady gets, I'm going to get one more. There were dime mistakes taken in front of me. Like, all that great stuff. I don't need football. I don't need it. Like, that's not what you want to hear from a potential franchise quarterback, and they shipped him off right away. Next year, hire Cliff Kingsbury, draft Kyler Murray first overall. He goes to Miami, can't get a sniff there. Then they draft Tua, and now he's a LinkedIn guy. And there's nothing wrong with being a LinkedIn guy, but when you're a top 10 pick in the NFL draft, I don't think you want to see a guy that was drafted the same year as you go to the Super Bowl who was not starting off, who did not start off his career with the most momentum, I guess we could say. I mean, he did beat the shit. The Jets did beat the shit out of the Detroit Lions his first ever start. But what I think is so funny about that game, and I don't know how many people out there know this or remember this, is that Sam Darnold's first throw in the NFL, his very first throw, was a pick six. His very first throw. And now we are sitting, and I keep going back to oh, Sam Darnold's in the Super Bowl, Sam Darnold's in the Super Bowl, because I didn't think this was going to be a reality this year. And I don't think I'm alone in saying that. And it has nothing to do with just Sam Darnold. I thought the Seahawks were going to be a solid team, but I didn't know what kind of team we were looking at. And a lot of people, if you were going into the season and saw the fact that they traded Geno Smith to the Raiders and brought in Sam Darnold, was like, this is somewhat not a confusing move. Because I think we could all see it. Geno Smith's getting older. Sam Darnold's younger. Like, it's a good move for the longevity at the quarterback position. They made a change to the coordinator. Ryan Grubb got fired. They brought in Clint Kubiak. So there were a couple moves that got made this offseason for the Jet, for the Seahawks. They traded DK Metcalf as well. And there was some, I don't want to say nervousness around the Seahawks, because they were a 10-win team last year with an offensive coordinator that they didn't, Mike McDonald didn't want there anymore. And an aging Geno Smith, they still were able to go on. They still were able to go on to win 10 games that year. So it was like these moves to bring in Darnold, to bring in a new coordinator in Kubiak, to trade DK Metcalf, your number one receiver, to the Pittsburgh Steelers. There were some moves that were like met with some skepticism. I don't want to say criticism, but they were met with some skepticism because there was always that concern. I brought this up 1,000 times last season. Like, when people are talking about, like, do you sign Sam Darnold to a long-term contract, I was nervous because I'm one of those people who, I don't like this about myself, but sometimes I can be pretty pessimistic. And there's a lot of quarterbacks throughout the history of the NFL where you've seen be one-season wonders. And Sam Darnold had been in the league, again, since 2018, and we had not seen any sustained success from him at the position up till that point in the slightest. Like, last year in Minnesota, 4,300 passing yards, 35 touchdowns, 12 picks. That is a very good season. That's a very, very good season. His career high numbers prior to that season were all the way back in 2019 when he had, where his passing yards wise, when he had 3,000 yards. So he had 1,300 more yards than his previous career high, which was all the way back in 2019. In regards to passing touchdowns, he had 19. He had 19 passing touchdowns in 2019 as well with 13 interceptions. So he had, what, 16 less touchdowns with one more interception with 1,300 less yards. Now, he threw a lot less passes because he only played 13 games that year as opposed to 17 last year because he early on in his career, he battled a lot of injuries. He was on pace, if I remember correctly, to break Peyton Manning's single-season rookie interception record. He had 15 that year, and he only played 13 games. I remember being a little skeptical about the injuries that he had, and they're like, oh, you're protecting Sam Darnold at this point. So to see where he was last year with the Vikings, that was a situation where you could look at realistically and go, you'd have to be pretty bad to not succeed in that situation. Given the fact that you have Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, you have a solid running back in Aaron Jones, you have Kevin O'Connell, you have Josh McCown, you have a good defense led by Brian Flores. Like, you're going to be good here. And he was. And then the Vikings made the decision to not re-sign him this past offseason. Because remember, they brought him in on a one-year deal, kind of like a career rejuvenation thing, like a rental, like, we're going to keep you here a year, build your confidence back up, and then we'll send you back out in the wild, and you can figure it out from there. Like, the Bills did that same thing to a different extent, obviously, because Josh Allen and J.J. McCarthy are not the same. There was more, I guess the Mitch Trubisky thing was more like Darnold with the 49ers rather than this. So never mind. Forget what I was just saying. Because the Bills brought in Mitch Trubisky to be the backup to Josh Allen. And then 1 year later, he went on to be the Pittsburgh Steelers starting quarterback for a hot second before getting benched there and then coming back to Buffalo. So that happened. But that's a little bit different than this exact situation. But going out to Seattle, it was like, is he going to be able to replicate what we saw in Minnesota? Especially after trading DK Metcalf. Everybody loves JSN, Jackson Smith and Jigba. But what else are they going to do at that position? They got a good running game. The offensive line is solid, especially after drafting Gray Zabel from North Dakota State at guard. Like, that was a very good get from them. It was a very Mike McDonald run offense type pick coming from North Dakota State, who is a team that loves to just pound the ball down the middle every single play. They love beating you up at the line of scrimmage. Like, that was a very, I want to run the ball more consistently type pick. And Darnold this year didn't really put up the same numbers that we saw last year with the Vikings, but they're still really good numbers. 4,000 yards passing, 25 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. I do believe he led the league in turnovers total, because I think he had 20 turnovers or something this season. But to go from where he was to where he is now is such a crazy turnaround that I was not expecting. And I refuse to believe that I was alone or am alone in regards to my surprise around Sam Darnold. And I cannot be upset about it at all. I'm only upset that he's in the Super Bowl before Josh Allen. That's the only thing I'm upset about. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. I'm not saying I'm not rooting for him. But that's just that little bit of, like, pettiness in me that hurts. And if you look at what he did in this game against the Rams and against the 49ers with a torn oblique, he's played great in these playoffs. And if you, like, what did I say when I was previewing the game, is that if I'm stuck picking a game here between the Rams and Rams and Seahawks, where I could see it going either way, it was a very highly contested game. The game ended up being 31-27, Seahawks winning, obviously. If I can't pick a game, I go with which quarterback I trust more. And all things considered, I trust Matt Stafford a whole lot more than I trust Sam Darnold, especially after the seasons they've had. Matt Stafford is one of the top two candidates for MVP, and the last playoff game that I saw Sam Darnold in was, ironically, against the Los Angeles Rams for the Minnesota Vikings, and he was not good. He was sacked 9 times that game. He went 25 of 40, 245, 1 touchdown, 1 pick, and sacked 9 times. And that was following a game where he was really bad against the Detroit Lions the last week of the regular season. So it's back-to-back games where he struggled immensely. And so going into this game against the LA Rams again, I was kind of sitting back going, well, I'm going to pick the team that I trust more, and that's the LA Rams with Matt Stafford. And Matt Stafford played a great game as well. 22 for 35, 374, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Just very fun quarterbacking in this game. Very fun quarterbacking. 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. Both quarterbacks throw for over 300 yards, well over 300 yards. It just happens that Sam Darnold and the Seahawks were the team that came out on top in this one. And it was an exciting game. It was a really fun, exciting game. And when you look at some of the plays that Darnold was making, like, he had a no-look pass to Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Smith and Jigba reached out with one hand to bring it in along the sideline. Like, that was awesome. Jackson Smith and Jigba has been awesome this year, but you all know that. We all know how awesome Jackson Smith and Jigba has been this year. And then you look at the touchdown throw that he had. Like, I love when offensive coordinators like Clint Kubiak, and there's others out there, that are able to scheme wide receivers open as good as Jackson Smith and Jigba, where everybody knows how good of a receiver that he is. Everybody knows it. I mean, you can't go throughout the season and not know that Jackson Smith and Jigba was as good as he was. I mean, he led the league in receiving yards this year with 1,700 yards, damn near 1,800 yards. He was 7 yards away from 1,800 yards. Like, you know how good he is. And the way the Seahawks utilize him and put him in the backfield and motion him across the formation, and the defense just loses him. He gets schemed open, and it's like, how do you do that? It's just so crazy, because you'd think there'd be multiple people with eyes on him, but that's just how the scheme works. And his touchdown pass to Jackson Smith-Njigba, wide open. And one thing that I want to credit Sam Darnold on more than anything, and that touchdown in particular, and there was a couple, I think there was an earlier throw in that drive where it was another thing like this, where he got, yes, Jackson Smith-Njigba again was wide open in the end zone, wide ass open. No one near him. Easy throw. But the thing is, Sam Darnold was getting hit while he threw it. He was backpedaling and lobbed it in there and got hit while he threw it. If that's Sam Darnold from 3 years ago, Sam Darnold's taking the sack, or he's fumbling the ball away. And Sam Darnold still has a little, you know, you question some of the fumbling issues a little bit still. That was a thing that was a conversation about him when he was coming out of USC. That was a conversation all the way back then. So this isn't really a surprise at this point. But in that moment, earlier Sam Darnold would have just fallen over, taken the sack, or fumbled the ball, or somehow managed to throw an interception. Like, that's what he would have done at that point in time. And yet, he was able to stand tall in the pocket, know that he's going to get hit, and sure, it wasn't like this monstrous hit from Ray Lewis or anything like that, but knowing you're going to get hit and still being able to throw an accurate ball, regardless of how open the receiver is damn impressive given where we saw Sam Darnold a few years ago. And that's what's so exciting to see about him. And that's what's so exciting about this game in particular, because we saw games in the past where the light got a little bit too bright for him. And this wasn't one of those games. The Seahawks relied on him throwing the football in this game. 36 pass attempts, 25 for 36 in this game, 346, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Like, they relied on him in this game, and he stepped up. And you want your quarterback to step up, and he's on a two or three year contract right now with Seattle. I would imagine he's going to get another pay rise here fairly shortly, especially if they're able to come over the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And that was a crazy sentence, but we're going to ignore that. As for the Rams, again, one thing that I think a lot of people can agree on, and I've seen some Rams fans talk about it on social media, is that they should have run the ball more. They had 22 carries for 114 yards in this game. Blake Corum, 9 carries. Kyren Williams had 10. And they had a good amount of those yards, if I'm not mistaken, in the first half. Now, I know they're playing from behind, so that kind of makes things a little bit harder to run the football. But I feel like that would have established so much more, made Matt Stafford's life a lot easier than what it was. But Puka Nacua, 165 yards in the game, 1 touchdown there. Devontae Adams on 89 yards and a touchdown there as well. Kyren Williams had a receiving touchdown there. As for the Seahawks, Jackson Smith-Njigba, Cooper Kupp against his former team, and Jake Bobo, of all people, coming down with touchdowns. And Matt Stafford is on a completely different career trajectory than Sam Darnold is. And we all know that. We can all root for Sam Darnold, but we all know objectively Matt Stafford has had a much better career. And that's not something that I really deserve, like, oh my God, that's some hard-hitting analysis right there, Logan. That's some really hard-hitting analysis. How'd you manage to come up with that one? Well, I am pretty smart. I'm drinking NOS Energy right now. It's helping boosting my energy right now, boosting my brainwaves and everything. So I'm able to come up with hard-hitting analysis like that. That's what you pay the big bucks for, right? That's what you pay the big bucks for. But Stafford, I was rooting for him to get to a Super Bowl. I was, because when the Rams won the Super Bowl a few years ago, when they beat the Cincinnati Bengals like 25 years ago, I'm obviously joking around because Bengals fans still talk about that Super Bowl. But when the Rams beat the Bengals that year, it turned into, oh my God, Matt Stafford's now a Hall of Famer. Just off of one Super Bowl, that was it. It was like, okay, Matt Stafford's now a Hall of Famer. I hit back on that because it was one Super Bowl. Yes, the Super Bowl is very important to a quarterback's legacy and everything like that. But at the same time, it hadn't been enough. It was his first year in LA, and he just led the league in interceptions. So I didn't want to sit here and go like, oh, that's a guaranteed Hall of Fame spot, because at that point in time, in my opinion, if you were going to say Matt Stafford's a Hall of Famer, then you're going to have to put Matt Ryan in the Hall of Fame. Because at that point in time, how many times throughout that 2009 all the way up to 2021, how many times was Matt Stafford a guaranteed top 5 quarterback in the NFL? And you know what's crazy about me saying that is the fact that a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Lions were just not a very good football team. Because how many times do you see a quarterback in the top five of the NFL that's not very good, that's on a very bad team? Like, the only guy you can think of on the top of your head right now is Joe Burrow. That's the only guy, because the Cincinnati Bengals are not a good football team. And if you had to quote, like, who's the next Matt Stafford, it's probably Joe Burrow. In regards to, he's probably going to go to another team. It could be ironic if it's the Rams, where they go on to win a Super Bowl or something. He ain't going to do it in Cincinnati. And I have a hard time believing he's going to play his entire career with the Cincinnati Bengals. But at that point in time, the Rams win the Super Bowl 2021, first year in L.A. People start saying, oh, this is MVP, this is Super Bowl, this is a Hall of Fame quarterback. And again, at that point in time, I was not ready to say that. At this point in time in 2025, with him looking like he's going to win the MVP, I could sit back and go, yeah, that's a Hall of Fame quarterback now. And that's been 5 years or 4 years since then. So I've had some things to grow on a little bit. And you look at the, some of the numbers that he's had in LA post the Super Bowl, like, they haven't been otherworldly numbers minus this year. I mean, in 2022, he had 10 touchdowns, 8 picks, then 24-11, then 20-8 last season. But I think last year, like I said, I had him as a top 5 quarterback in my quarterback rankings going into the season. That was based off a 20-8 season. Because Matt Stafford was making plays that the stat sheets wouldn't really respect, or at least looking at the passing touchdown numbers in that respect. And Matt Stafford this year, 46 touchdowns, 8 picks. And you look at the playoffs, you have 52 touchdowns, 9 picks on the season. That's pretty damn impressive. Throwing for over 5,000 yards in total as well is insane. And to lose a playoff game doing what he was doing and not turning the ball over is an insane gut punch. And that reminds me a lot of when the Bills lost in the 13-second game. Reminded me a lot of that. Not the exact same scenario, but in regards to a quarterback doing everything he can, going punch for punch, bar for bar with the opposing quarterback and coming out of losing end, because someone's got to lose. It just sucks that it's your guy. And if Matt Stafford won a Super Bowl this year, that would have cemented everything. I think the MVP already puts him over that. Super Bowl and an MVP, I think, already puts him in that conversation. I think being a top two MVP candidate this year, I think, anyways, puts him in there. But a Super Bowl would have guaranteed that. But I don't think his legacy was on the line due to this one game, because he still put up the performance that you needed from a quarterback to win a game like this in a hostile environment such as CenturyLink Field. That's what you want to see your quarterback do. It's just a shame that, again, someone's got to come on the losing side of things. And Matt Stafford and Sam Darnold put up, again, very similar numbers. Like, Sam Darnold threw one more pass than Matt Stafford. He completed 3 more passes than him. Matt Stafford had more yards. They had the same number of touchdowns. Each one of them, no interceptions. So I don't think there was any quote-unquote legacy games on the line in this playoffs. And Matt Stafford, with this season, becomes the third quarterback all time to have multiple 50-plus passing touchdown seasons. The other two are Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Matt Stafford did it in 2021 and 2025. Like, Matt Stafford, I think his stuff was already locked in. And I saw Bomani Jones, which, Bomani Jones, you have to take what he says with a pinch of salt, obviously. But I don't think there was any legacy on the line here. And then you obviously got the conversation about him and Aaron Rodgers again, about, like, who's the better quarterback all time and that. I remember we asked that question, like, a few months ago. Or maybe a few weeks. I don't remember exactly how long ago it was. But I remember having that conversation about, like, oh, who's going to – is Matt Stafford's legacy – going to be better than Aaron Rodgers' legacy? And then I see this, though. This is what I see. This is why I'm bringing this up now. It's because FanDuel, these betting apps on Twitter and stuff, like, you could look at BetMGM, FanDuel, all the other ones, DraftKings. Sometimes these guys get unhinged and start going a little bit crazy in regards to social media and just journalism in general right now, and I say journalism with this, that's not what I'm not talking about this specific thing for journalism, but social media right now is pretty much how much attention can I get? How much of a conversation, how many interactions can I get with this social media post? That's what the main focus is right now. And FanDuel, I remember a couple years ago, or a few years ago, FanDuel posted a thing, would you rather have LaDainian Tomlinson or Alvin Kamara as your team's running back? And I'd say, yeah, it's a pretty close one, but also LaDainian Tomlinson is almost 50 years old, so I don't know if that's really fair. But if we're talking about in their primes, it's not even a conversation. LaDainian Tomlinson is a top five running back all time. I love Alvin Kamara. I think he's a very good player. But you can't compare LaDainian Tomlinson and Alvin Kamara. But it got people talking. I'm still talking about it to this day. But FanDuel, a couple days ago, posted, if Matt's, this is before the game, obviously, if Matt Stafford wins an MVP and another Super Bowl, so I guess this could continue on to next year if needed, or however many years he's got left, which I wouldn't be shocked if he retired this year. It wouldn't shock me, or I have to wait and see, obviously. But if Matt Stafford wins MVP and another Super Bowl, is he a top five quarterback all time? Long answer is no. Short answer is no. It's not, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. If you know me, you've known what my top five quarterbacks in all time are. It's pretty consistent throughout the past however many years now. It is Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning, and John Elway. That's my top five. And then once you get outside of the top five, then you're looking at the likes of Dan Marino as a top five quarterback of all time. Or top 10, sorry. You're looking at Rodgers, Favre. You're looking at Steve Young. You're looking at Johnny Unitas. You're looking at Otto Graham. Like, you're looking at a lot of different quarterbacks in this conversation. And there's a conversation, again, that we've had about, let's take out the top five conversation, because that's top five things ridiculous. You'd have to win a couple more Super Bowls to get in that top five. And I know, like, you look at, oh, John Elway's got two Super Bowls, Peyton Manning's got two Super Bowls. They're better than Matt Stafford. Again, there's more things to just Super Bowl MVPs to go like, oh, that guy's better than this guy. And we've talked about the Aaron Rodgers thing before. And if you look at the numbers between Rodgers and Matt Stafford at this point in time, the numbers are not really boding well for Matt Stafford in this situation. As Rodgers now, he has more games played, so that's a little bit different, but it's not like an insane, insurmountable number. It's 264 to 239 in favor of Rodgers. Records, we're not going to include that because I don't, records for QBs is not, I don't care. It also doesn't help that one played for the Green Bay Packers, the other one played for the Detroit Lions, and was drafted first overall by a team that just went 0-16. So I don't really want to sit there and compare quarterback records here. Completion percentage, though, goes to Rodgers, which that one shouldn't be very surprising. Passing yards, Rodgers is 66,000 yards. Matt Stafford is 64,000 yards. Pass yards per attempt, it's pretty close, 7.6, 7.4. Matt Stafford has more passing yards per game, 269 to 251. Passing touchdowns, Aaron Rodgers has 527, Matt Stafford has 423. Interceptions, Rodgers has less with 123 to Stafford's 196. Passer rating is higher for Rodgers. Rushing numbers, don't care, neither one of them are that athletic. I know Rodgers is more athletic than Matt Stafford, we've known that. And then Pro Bowls, that does not matter, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But all pros, Rodgers has 5. MVPs, Rodgers has 4. Super Bowl MVP, Rodgers has 1. Stafford has none of those. Because remember, Cooper Kupp won the MVP back when the Rams won the Super Bowl against the Cincinnati Bengals. So the conversation is not about who's the better quarterback at this point. You would go legacy if they would go on to win a Super Bowl, which that's a completely different conversation. Because there's that old saying that Aaron Rodgers would love to have Eli Manning's career. There's that old saying. Do you agree with that? I'm not saying you have to. I'm not saying I agree with that. But that's a saying that gets thrown around quite a bit. And we'll talk about Eli Manning and the Hall of Fame and all that stuff here shortly too. But I don't think, again, anything was on the line for Matt Stafford winning or losing this game. Now, if he sucked in this game and they lost, then yeah, that would be a completely different conversation. If he played like CJ Stroud against the New England Patriots, then yeah, that would have been a different conversation. But the fact of the matter is, he didn't. It's just unfortunate that they came out on the losing side of it. Just unfortunate. But speaking of the Patriots, unfortunately, we have to talk about this game. They beat the Denver Broncos by a score of 10-7. Boring-ass game. And there was a blizzard in the second half, like probably with 10 minutes to go in the third quarter, things started kicking up a little bit. I'm not going to lie, I really struggled watching this game. I really struggled watching it. Like, I turned it on, and, well, one, this is going to sound really bad. One, I forgot, I didn't know what time the game started. I was so out of the loop in regards to when the game started that I missed Jarrett Stidham's touchdown pass. I missed his touchdown pass. I missed his 54-yard touchdown pass to Lil Jordan, or to Cortland Sutton. Or not 54. He got the big pass to set it up, and then he got the touchdown pass in there to Cortland Sutton. Regardless, I missed it. And it was sad because I got all excited. It was the first quarter. It was awesome. The Broncos were up. They went 3 and out in their first drive, and then they get the ball again, 52-yard pass down to Marvin Mims, get them down to the 7-yard line. A few plays later, you get a 6-yard touchdown pass to Cortland Sutton. And I was like, oh, my God, this game is starting off so beautifully, especially after the Patriots punted after 6 plays. And it was awesome, and it was going to be great. It was fantastic and all that great stuff. And then, then the Patriots won. And again, after that pass, I got the update about the pass, the 52-yard pass to Marvin Mims. I got the update about that. I said, oh, shit, that game's on. I turned it on for about maybe 5 seconds, and then I turned it off because I couldn't bear watching it. And you could sit there and go like, well, Logan, that's stupid. But the pain still hurts from the Bills losing to the Denver Broncos. It still hurts. And watching the rest of the game did not make it feel any type of way better. It did not help at all. Jarrett Stidham throwing an interception late in the game to Christian Gonzalez did not help me in the slightest. He had the ball. You throw the game. You throw it down the field. Christian Gonzalez gets the pick at the 36-yard line. Game's pretty much over. 2 minutes, 18 seconds left. Then you let Drake May run to get a first down on third down, and then the game's over. Get a 7-yard run from Drake May, and you win the game pretty much. You miss a field goal, get a couple missed field goals in there from Will Lutz, which convenient that he couldn't miss he missed field goals this weekend. Pretty convenient there, huh, Will? It just was, I don't know. It was an unfortunate situation. It was just an unfortunate situation. And then you get like the Jarrett Stidham fumble, which that's been a heavy conversation on social media recently. Patriots scored 2 plays later. You turn the ball over on downs. You have a chance to go up 10-0. You're at the 14-yard line. Jarrett Stidham's pass falls incomplete. And, yeah, the Patriots punt again, but then you fumble in the next drive. Like, it was just a very bad sequence of events for the Broncos in this. And it sucks that Jarrett Stidham was in the game for the Broncos, given the fact that Bo Nix broke his ankle. But, like, I didn't expect anything from Jarrett Stidham. Like, the thing is, in these types of situations, if you have a backup quarterback in that's Jarrett Stidham, of all people, and he hasn't thrown a single pass all year, like, I believe the only other person that's thrown a pass this year for the Broncos is RJ Harvey. Like, I'm pretty sure that's the only guy that's thrown a pass this year, other than Bo Nix. So to have Jarrett Stidham come in to start the AFC Championship game against a defense that's as good as the Patriots defense, that's not really the most ideal situation to be in. Like, does Bo Nix throw the interception to Christian Gonzalez? Does he fail to hit the pass on the fourth down conversion? Does he fumble the ball away later? What, like, you don't know. We can't play that game, but it gets a nice little fail-safe in regards to, oh, we lost the game because Jarrett Stidham was playing. So now you have that high ground thing of like, well, we'll never know because he only scored 10 points. We would have scored more points if our starting quarterback was playing. Like, it's a pretty cool thing to have for you in your favor in these types of situations. It's unfortunate that you lost the game, but you have that in place, so you can always bring that up in arguments, so you can kind of like deflect the pain that you're feeling because you're not going to a Super Bowl. And we have to watch the Patriots win a Super Bowl. Or not win, but go to a Super Bowl. And when I brought up like the pain of the Bills not making the Super Bowl or not making the AFC Championship game, what was so annoying, or what sucked, the Buffalo Bills allowed 33 points to the Broncos in the divisional round. 33 points. Remember, the Bills lost 33-30. Yeah. The Patriots allowed 26 points across 3 playoff games. And the conversation I've been seeing around the New England Patriots is that how bad Drake May has been playing, and two, that the Patriots had an easy walk to the Super Bowl. Now, to start off with the first thing, Drake May, no, he has not played good this playoffs. Drake May has not played good. And it's not just this game. He didn't play good against the Chargers. He didn't play good against the Texans. This game was kind of like the final cherry on top for the Patriots going to the Super Bowl. Because the entire year, everybody was talking about the schedule. Like, oh my God, the Patriots have the easiest schedule in the league. Now they're going to the Super Bowl. They had the easy pathway to the Super Bowl. Now they're going to the Super Bowl. Drake May didn't even need to play good, and they're going to the Super Bowl. Drake May is the first quarterback in NFL history to throw for under 100 yards in the AFC Championship game and win. The first quarterback to do so. That's another reason why we always say wins are not a quarterback stat. quarterbacks can help you win games, and sometimes a win and loss can be on the quarterback, but not every win and not every loss is on the quarterback. That's why we talked about Matt Stafford threw for 374 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, and lost. And Drake May threw for 86 yards. Now, he had a few yards on the ground, too, and he helped pick up some crucial first downs for the Patriots. They had 65 rushing yards and a touchdown. Like, there's stuff like that that Drake May can do, and I brought that up with the Bills game earlier this year, where it was like, Drake May extending plays causes so many problems for opposing defenses, and you saw that late, that third down conversion in the fourth quarter. Like, being able to extend plays like that. Like, that's so crucial. You don't need to be playing a great game throughout. You just need to make the moments, make the plays when your team needs them to, and he was able to do that on that fourth down conversion. That was the biggest play of the game. Now, some people could say the quarterback sneak was the biggest play of the game as well. That some people could say that, and they could say whatever they want about that. But the fact of the matter is, no, Drake May did not play good. And it's so funny. I love how NFL Twitter works. I love it. It's so hilarious. Like, the entire season, or not the entire season, but the back half of the season, you have all these Drake May people, and I liked Drake May until he played for the Patriots. All these Drake May people talking about all these numbers that are on the line for Drake May to win MVP. It's like, oh my God, Drake May is winning MVP. If you think Matt Stafford's winning MVP, again, we said this last week, you don't know ball. That's everybody's favorite phrase on Twitter. You don't know ball. You don't know ball if you think Drake May's not going to win MVP. You don't know ball. Look at all these numbers. Yeah, you don't know ball. Playoffs happen, and now we're sitting back going like, man, is Drake... Because remember, Cam Newton said that Drake May's a system quarterback, or game manager, sorry, not a game changer. And now we're like, oh, is Drake May actually a game changer? Is he really a game changer? Is he just a manager? And now I saw a nickname. They called him the schedule. They called him the schedule. So... So the narrative switch on Drake May from the regular season to the postseason is kind of funny. And I don't want to sit here and act like they haven't played good defenses. And I said this last week that it is kind of funny where we're going around like people on social media going like, oh, the Patriots have this easy schedule. And we're predicting to lose every week. Now, I could sit back and also say, and I brought this up last week around that same argument, like ESPN, their NFL kickoff crew or whatever, there are four or five people on this panel, and all four or five of them picked the Houston Texans to beat the Patriots, but now we're sitting back going like, oh, the Patriots had a really easy schedule? Like, does it help that the Jarrett Stidham played in this game instead of Drake or instead of Bo Nix? Yeah, it does, but if he played, then what's to say that the Patriots don't play better in their own right because now they're losing rather than winning the game? Then maybe that's a scenario we have to entertain as well. Because just because Bo Nix means doesn't mean the Patriots are playing the exact way, same way. Because, again, we don't have the interception, we don't have the fumble, and we don't have the missed throw on fourth down. Like, those are three plays right there that could shift the entire course of the game that gets the Patriots also some momentum as well, and they start scoring more. Patriots didn't feel the need to really do anything in this game. They were in control pretty much the entire time, barring the first interception of the game. And you had this, some situation for the Broncos, but they weren't really moments where you sat back and like, oh, I actually believe the Broncos are going to do something here. And the defense gifting them short fields makes their lives very simple. And the Patriots took advantage of that. And it sucks that we're in this situation right now. And it sucks because I pick against the Patriots every single time. Like we do with the College Football Playoff stuff or the bowl game stuff. I'm never picking Minnesota, Nebraska, Northwestern, or any of these teams to win bowl games. I don't care if they're undefeated in the national championship game and they're 100-point favorites. I ain't picked the Patriots to win this game against the Broncos. I was going all in on Jarrett Stidham throwing for 8,000 yards and dipping his nuts right in Mike Vrabel's face. Like, that's where I was wanting. That's what I was hoping for. That's what I was going to say was happening. It was going to be perfect, poetic, and all that great stuff. It's just a shame it didn't happen. So my reason for not picking the Patriots is different than everybody else's. Not everybody, but some people out there. Because I am never picking the Patriots to win a game. Barring if I'm making actual predictions. If it's like preseason predictions, yeah, I'm not going to say they're going to go 0-17. As much as I would love to say that's going to happen, I'm not going to sit back and go like, oh yeah, the New England Patriots, they'll finish 0-17 this year. Now for a playoff run, I'm picking the Chargers, Texans, and Broncos to beat them every single time. And you're damn right, I'm picking the Seattle Seahawks over the Patriots in this one. Obviously I'm picking them. But obviously, we're not going over the Super Bowl prediction right now. But that Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl, it hurts a little bit. Just given the fact that the Patriots are in the Bills division. Sam Darnold was in the same draft as Josh Allen. And now both those teams are in the Super Bowl. Like, the Patriots to go from Tom Brady to sucking. Like, the Bills, when they beat the Patriots in the playoffs. When they absolutely had their way with the Patriots in 2021. And Josh Allen had 5 touchdowns in that game. Like, that was a game where it's like, that's the turning of the guard right there. And the freezing cold temperatures in Buffalo, to do what they did to the Patriots, was like, oh, that's so poetic. It is so, that's one of my favorite games, top 5 favorite games I've ever watched in my life, is that game right there. That felt like that's the change of the guard. And the Patriots sucked the next 2 years, went 4-13. And then now, I've watched the Patriots go 4-13 back-to-back years, and then now they're in the Super Bowl. And the Bills had not made the Super Bowl since. That's the annoying part. That's what's really sad. And watching Sam Darnold go to the Super Bowl, again, I have no ill will towards Sam Darnold. He never really caused me a lot of problems when he was with the Jets. It's just more of a personal thing of like, I got to watch Sam Darnold play in a Super Bowl and have that patch on his jersey before I get to see Josh Allen do that. And that's what sucks. And I don't like that. It hurts my insides. But Seahawks-Patriots right now, as things stand, the Seahawks are a 4.5-point favorite. I am excited to see the Super Bowl. I mean, it's funny because when things happen, like the initial reaction is like, oh my God, I hate this. And now I'm going to watch the Super Bowl. I'm going to watch it, obviously. I'm not going to not watch it. But it sucks that I wanted the Broncos and Rams, and I got the Patriots and Seahawks. Again, no ill will towards the Seahawks, though. I have no ill will towards. I like Mike McDonald. I like Sam Darnold. Rashid Shaheed, that's another person. I wanted him so bad on the Buffalo Bills in the trade deadline, and they couldn't bring him. They didn't bring him in. They said they brought in Brandon Cooks. That was a great move. Great move. Same team, just the wrong receiver. Wrong receiver. Would have loved Rashid Shaheed in Buffalo. He was the guy. Out of all the trade deadline guys, he was the guy I wanted the most. Add that little bit of oomph to the passing offense. It's just what I needed. But looking at the Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl, they've met in the Super Bowl before. Like, we all remember Malcolm Butler. We remember that Super Bowl where you didn't hand it off to Marshawn Lynch. You threw the ball. Russell Wilson gets picked off by Malcolm Butler. No one ever heard of him before the game started. And then he comes in and makes one of the biggest plays of the season. Or not one of the biggest play of the season. And you lose the Super Bowl. Seahawks looking to go back-to-back in the Super Bowl. They were looking to go back-to-back, cement themselves as a potential dynasty. Like, they win the Super Bowl against Denver in emphatic fashion, winning that game 43-8. Emphatic victory. Like, it was an insanely terrible game. I mean, I loved it because I didn't like the Broncos. Never liked the Broncos. So I enjoyed watching it. I was watching at my friend's house, who was a big Broncos fan, which made it that much more entertaining. Especially watching the snap over Peyton Manning's head. Like, it was just, it was fantastic. And then to go back to the Super Bowl and lose the way you did in 2014 and then not get back, that was a stinger. That was a real stinger. And if I remember correctly, I don't even think they went back to the NFC Championship game after that. I don't think they ever went back. It was just one and done. Like, you go to the wild, or you're in the wild card, losing the divisional round. I don't think they ever went back to the NFC Championship game. So it was like an absolute killer of a playoff performance from that game, or not playoff performance, that moment in time. Pick. Game was winning the game. You're going to win the game if you just hand the ball off to Marshawn Lynch. That's all you needed to do. That's all you needed. And you lost. But everybody remembers that game. Everybody remembers where they were when that game took place. Sorry, I need to take a drink. Everybody remembers. And everybody remembers who the head coaches were in that game. One of them was Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll obviously was looking to go back-to-back Super Bowls. Going from what he did in college. Like, if you look back at Pete Carroll's early career in coaching, he was in the NFL before everybody remembers him at USC. But he was in the NFL first. And he was with the Jets originally. And he was with the Patriots. And he went to the playoffs twice. with the Patriots, but he wasn't anything spectacular with the New England Patriots. Right, throughout his time in the NFL, he wasn't very spectacular. He was in college where he's winning national championships, getting Heisman Trophy winners and stuff like that. Like, that's where he made his name. And he goes back to the NFL with the Seahawks, which, very convenient timing with everything. But he goes to the Seahawks. They're 7-9 back-to-back years. And then 11-5, losing the divisional round to the Falcons. And then you go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl in 2013. With Legion of Boom, all that stuff. Like, everybody knows Pete Carroll was the head coach of that team. Everybody remembers the clip of Pete Carroll sticking his hands on his head when he goes, "Oh, no!" when Russell Wilson throws the pick. And everybody knows who the head coach of the Patriots was. It was Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick is one of the, if not the greatest head coach of all time. Everybody knows Bill Belichick. 6-time Super Bowl champion. 8-time, if you're including his time as assistant coach for the New York Giants. 3-time AP NFL Coach of the Year. 2000s All-Decade Team, 2010s All-Decade Team, NFL 100 Anniversary All-Time Team. And then all the stuff with the New England Patriots, everybody knows that. Holds the NFL record for most Super Bowl wins. That's combined with head coach and assistant coach. That's 8. Most Super Bowl wins as a head coach, which is 6. Again, everybody should know that at this point in time. It's pretty common. Most Super Bowl appearances, 12. Most Super Bowl appearances as a head coach, 9. Most playoff wins as a head coach, 31. Most playoff appearances as a head coach, 19, which is tied. Most divisional championships as a head coach, 17. 17 AFC titles. That's sad. That's sad. And yet, all that being said, everything I just said there, Bill Belichick is not a first ballot Hall of Famer. Bill Belichick did not get inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame on his first time of asking. That is insane. Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely stupid. That is one of the dumbest things I think I've ever heard in my life as a football fan. And I don't want to use this whole thing about, like, oh my God, I'm a Bills fan and I'm even saying this. I hate when people do that. I think everybody, no matter how much you hated the New England Patriots, can sit back and agree that this is bullshit. That Bill Belichick is not a first ballot Hall of Famer. And the reasoning behind it is because Bill Polian. And for those of you who don't know who Bill Polian is, Bill Polian was the GM. First off, Bill Polian was the GM of the Buffalo Bills back in the 90s. He was the general manager of the Buffalo Bills. He was the general manager for 3 of the 4 Super Bowls, if I'm not mistaken, when they went back to back to back to back. One of those Super Bowls, for those of you who don't remember, was against the New York Giants. That was the first one. Bill Belichick was the defensive coordinator once again of that New York Giants defense that stopped the high-powered Buffalo Bills offense. Because remember, I believe I brought this up for the NFC Championship game. If you remember the AFC, or not remember, because I don't think a lot of you were alive for this game, but if you remember looking back at that game and what happened prior to, the Buffalo Bills beat the Los Angeles, I can't remember what version of the Raiders they were at that time, whatever version of the Raiders they were, beat the Raiders 51-3 in the AFC Championship game. Beat the absolute living shit out of the Raiders in the AFC Championship game, 51-3. The Giants beat the San Francisco 49ers on a last-second field goal, 15-13, I think was the final score there, with Jeff Hostetler as the starting quarterback. Phil Simms was out. Phil Simms won a Super Bowl against the Denver Broncos back in the 80s. So they have a Super Bowl-winning quarterback not playing due to injury, and Jeff Hostetler going into San Francisco and then beating the 49ers. There was not a lot of people that were super high on the New York Giants going to that Super Bowl against the Buffalo Bills in that high-powered offense. Again, 51-3 versus, I couldn't get the score wrong for the Giants game, but I'm pretty sure it was 15-13. Last-second field goal. And the Giants going to win the Super Bowl 2019. Obviously, the wide-right game and all that stuff. But the main reason, or one of the main reasons why the Giants won that game is because they ran the ball, controlled the clock, and they made sure to focus in on Thurman Thomas, who at that point in time was the most important player on the Buffalo Bills offense. He made everything go. Like, the greatest show on turf with Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk. Marshall Faulk was the guy that made that offense go. As great as everybody else was on offense, like Kurt Warner, Orlando Pace at left tackle, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, like all these great players, Marshall Faulk was the reason that offense was as effective as it was. And that was Thurman Thomas for that Buffalo Bills team. And they made sure to attack him to stop him, and that would stop or at least slow down the Buffalo Bills' high-powered offense. They won the game. So he's already taken one Super Bowl away from him. Fast forward a few years, Bill Polian becomes the head coach, or the head coach, the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts. For those of you who don't know, the Indianapolis Colts and New England Patriots rivalry was massive in the early 2000s to 2010s. Bill Polian was the general manager from 98 to 2009. 98 to 2009. In that time frame, the New England Patriots won three Super Bowls from 98 to 2009. They won in 2001, 2003, and 2004. Now, they did lose. The Colts won a Super Bowl in 2006, beating the New England Patriots in the AFC Championship game. But that was it. That was the only Super Bowl they got, beating the Chicago Bears in 2006. Obviously lost to the New Orleans Saints in a Super Bowl, but losing to the Patriots the way they did in those time frames, like 2004, lost to the Patriots in the divisional round. Then you look at 2003, lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. Like, a lot of the reasons that Bill Polian does not have as many Super Bowl rings, or doesn't have more Super Bowl rings, sorry, a lot of that has to do with Bill Belichick. A lot of that has to do with Bill Belichick. He's won one Super Bowl. Bill Belichick, on top of Bill Polian alone, has won four. Just on him alone. Three times in those playoffs, the only time they didn't play the Colts in the playoffs was 2001. And that Colts team in 2001 was not very good, if I remember correctly. That might have been it. Yeah, that was a year they weren't very good. They were still trying to get up to being a good football team, if I remember correctly. So you want directly on Bill Polian won three Super Bowls, not including the first one in 2001 as the head coach of the Patriots. And Bill Polian's the main reason why Bill Belichick is not in the Pro Football Playoff Hall, the Pro Football Hall of Fame on the first ballot. And it has to do with Spygate. Who the hell cares? Good Lord. Every coach, every team is trying to do it in some certain way. It's not like the freaking the Astros with the buzzers on them or anything. And the team that caught him was the freaking Jets with Eric Mangini, who's a former assistant coach of the Patriots. Jimmy Johnson, Hall of Fame head coach, beat the Bills in two Super Bowls in the 90s. He said, if they are using this excuse of Spygate, that's ridiculous. Many teams, including ourselves, tried it. Howard Mudd at Kansas City, who later coached for Bill Polian and Tony Dungy, gave us the idea. He was the best. We didn't get anything. We didn't get anything and stop, but many teams gave it a try. If they're using Spygate to use this as a thing to keep Bill Belichick out of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, that's ridiculous. And Bill Polian started off. It started off by going Bill Polian brought this up before the voting starts. For those of you who don't know, the Pro Football Hall of Fame has 50 voters, and they're anonymous votes. And you go in and vote for all that, but apparently Bill Polian, you need 10 to pass. You need 10. So 11, or not, you need 9 to pass. 10, you need less than 10 to pass. In regards to, like, people not voting for you. And apparently Bill Polian said, pretty much just said, Spygate, mic drop, and then everybody's like, ooh, Spygate. And then they asked Bill Polian about it. First thing came out, oh, he didn't vote for him because Spygate. And then it turned into, oh, I don't remember if I voted for Bill Belichick or not. And then it turned into, oh, yeah, I remember voting for Bill Belichick. It's like every single time got more and more because he got more and more shit for it as time went on. Every single thing got voted more. Oh, he said Spygate, so he didn't vote for him. Then he turned into, oh, I'm not sure. I don't remember if I voted for him. And then, oh, yeah, I voted for him. That doesn't sound innocent to me, ladies and gentlemen. That sounds like somebody who did not vote for the arguably the greatest coach of all time. And I say arguably because we've had this conversation before about Bill Belichick and about the Patriots dynasty and all that stuff. And I've always said that when it came to the Patriots, I feared Tom Brady. I never feared Bill Belichick. I feared Tom Brady. When the Bills beat the Patriots during that time frame, usually it was week 17 when the Patriots already locked up a playoff spot, so we're playing Brian Hoyer or Jimmy Garoppolo or who else? I can't remember what other quarterbacks they've had at that time frame. But regardless, that was when the Bills would beat the Patriots. It was never when Tom Brady was playing. Like, I give the Patriots dynasty most of the credit to Tom Brady, but in that same breath, I'm not going to take anything away from Bill Belichick and say he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame because his record without Tom Brady is worse than what it is with Tom Brady. Like, I'm not going to sit here and do that either. The fact of the matter is Bill Belichick should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. And if we're going to have conversations about any head coach in the future, nobody should be a first ballot Hall of Famer then. Not one coach should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. If Bill Belichick is not a first ballot Hall of Famer, you don't need to like Bill Belichick. I don't like Bill Belichick. But at the same time, we can all agree that this is ridiculous that we're having this conversation right now. And we're talking about, like, oh, the NFL Hall of Fame, they always support, like, we want to put in the best characters. Like, O.J. Simpson, first ballot Hall of Famer. Lawrence Taylor, upstanding character, first ballot Hall of Famer. Ray Lewis, all the stuff that he had off the field before he got to the NFL, first ballot Hall of Famer. Michael Irvin, same thing. Like, all these guys, we're talking about, like, character and all that stuff and things they did on and off the field, whatever. And yet, now we're starting this with Bill Belichick. They did the same freaking thing with Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens, by all accounts, should have been a first ballot. Terrell Owens is a top three receiver of all time. Top three receiver of all time. He was not a first ballot Hall of Famer. And that's only because the NFL Writers Association didn't like the people that are doing these are media people who didn't like interviewing Terrell Owens. The same thing goes for Belichick. What is one thing that everybody always talked about Bill Belichick his entire career? Is that, oh, he didn't like talking to the media. Oh, he gives boring interviews. Oh, he's pretty snippy with the media. And guess what didn't vote for him first ballot Hall of Fame? The freaking idiots in the media who are getting all their panties all in a bunch and won't vote him in because they didn't like him when they interviewed him. Like, as much as it has to do with Spygate and all that stuff, I guarantee more of it as well, because Bill Bowen only brought that up because he's a cranky old bastard who's jealous of what Bill Belichick did. And it's a guy who, again, was the general manager of the Buffalo Bills, the Bills' most famous time in franchise history. Four straight Super Bowls, the only team in NFL history to ever go to four straight Super Bowls. And he was the general manager for three of them, but still. Like, that's it. It's happened. Like, stuff is so annoying when this happens. Like, just put him freaking in. Put your freaking loser biases aside. Just put him in. Because now you've opened up the door for now Tom Brady's not going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer because of the stupid Deflategate. And that's even dumber than Spygate. Deflategate's one of the dumbest things. I remember when that was a thing back. That was one of the dumbest suspensions I think I've ever seen. That game against the Indianapolis Colts where Deflategate was a thing would not have mattered regardless of how inflated the balls were because the Patriots beat the absolute piss out of the Indianapolis Colts in that game. That would, however inflated or deflated, however, whatever way the balls were in that game, it does not matter. The Patriots were beating the piss out of the Indianapolis Colts. Like, it's so stupid. So now he better not be a first ballot Hall of Famer because now we've set the precedent here. And Drew Brees is going to be a Hall of Famer this year. And yet we're not going to think about it or nobody's going to want to talk about it because it's going to be like, man, what do you think about Bill Belichick not making the Hall of Fame? It's silly. It's stupid. I did think this was also interesting, and maybe not to the same extent, but Eli Manning didn't make it. I thought off the Manning name alone, he would have been a first ballot guy. Just off the Manning last name. Not to mention the other stuff that he did throughout his career, like two-time Super Bowl MVP, two-time Super Bowl champ, and all that stuff. Some of the greatest numbers in those two runs in NFL history in regards to the teams they played as well. Like, great stuff from Eli. And he's not even making a second ballot. Which, I can't sit here and, like, dispute that. But I thought it was pretty much locked in that he was going to be a first ballot guy. I'm not surprised. Like, the NFL, the Hall of Fame has always been very strict in how they get in. But players, again, there's certain guys you don't really need to have conversations about. You don't really need to have a conversation about Bill Belichick being a first ballot Hall of Famer. We don't really need to have that conversation. Regardless of what you feel about him, we don't need to have that. And yet here we are talking about it. And it's crazy. But, you know, shit happens, I guess. Shit happens. But speaking of head coaches, I feel like this is the best place to go from this. Because I didn't know where to start off with this or where to pick this up at. But I mean, obviously you knew I was going to talk about it. The Buffalo Bills hired Joe Brady to be the head coach over the organization. And if you remember what I was saying last time, where you talked about the head coaching stuff and everything, I was not the most, like, I didn't think Joe Brady was going to be the head coach. I didn't. I thought they would go in a new direction. I thought they would bring someone else in. I felt like the connection to Josh Allen would be important. That's why I said Brian Daboll and Davis Webber, the two guys I think are the most likely at this point. And Clint Kubiak was a guy that I was very high on as well. I think a lot of people were very high on. And then as the day grew closer to where it was like, okay, the Bills are going to hire a coach here soon, Grant Yudinski, the Jaguars offensive coordinator, he was a guy that a lot of people are like, oh, Grant Yudinski, he's going to be the guy that's going to be the Bills head coach. All the odds shot up to the freaking roof that Yudinski was going to be the next head coach of the Buffalo Bills. He withdrew his name out of the Cleveland Browns head coaching search, which a lot of coaches did that, and he was going back to Jacksonville on a pay raise, but the only team he would go leave for would be the Buffalo Bills. So he's either getting the Bills head coaching job or he's going to be the OC in Jacksonville. Same thing with Brian Daboll. He's either going to be the Bills head coach or he's going to be the Titans offensive coordinator. Everything up to that point, nothing pointed to me saying Joe Brady is going to be the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. And if I take a step back, it was what they were obviously going to do. Because one thing that the Bills have been this offseason, or anything less than what the Bills have been this offseason, is consistent. They haven't been, like, we talked about the press conference, Terry Pegula, Brandon Bean, all that. Talk about the consistency in regards to the press conference, what they were talking about in there. Just never had that consistency there whatsoever. Whatsoever. Like, people would ask Terry Pegula if they fired Sean McDermott after this game. He'd say no. But the reason he also fired him is because he walked in the locker room, saw Josh Allen crying, and he didn't even acknowledge me with being there. And I told him it was a catch and all that stuff. Yada, yada. So you did fire him after the game. So what would have happened if the Bills won that game? I don't want to speculate. What do you mean you don't want to speculate? That's not speculating. Would you have fired him, yes or no, had the Bills beat the Denver Broncos? You fired him after one game. You fired him after that specific game. If the Bills won, you wouldn't have fired him. And the Bills went to the AFC Championship game and lost, would you have still had that? And you talk about the Bills hitting this proverbial playoff wall, I just had this thought process that the Bills were hitting the wall. And we just needed new leadership in there. So if you're hitting this proverbial playoff wall, as you say, why would you promote the guy who's been the offensive coordinator for the last three playoff losses? Joe Brady's been in Buffalo a lot longer than I think a lot of people have kind of understood. Like, he was the quarterback coach before being the offensive coordinator here. And if you're talking about getting, like, we're hitting the wall, why would you bring a guy in that the previous head coach hired? That doesn't make any sense. Again, maybe I'm overanalyzing this a little bit, but how would you look at, how can you say all this stuff about Sean McDermott and then talk about the coaching staff, throwing the entire coaching staff under the bus about drafting Keon Coleman and promoting a guy who's on said coaching staff? Like, what? It doesn't make any sense. Again, the relationship with Josh Allen, I understand, is important there. But out of all the head coaching candidates available, I did not think Joe Brady was really realistically going to be one of the guys. I never had him in a top three candidacy in there at all. I was pretty confident it was going to be one of Daboll or Davis Webb or Kubiak or Yudinski. I was fairly confident in all those guys. Joe Brady, yes, took a couple interviews for head coaching jobs, but I never once thought that he was going to go out there and be a head coaching candidate, be a head coach somewhere. I never once thought that. He was interviewing for the Ravens. He interviewed for the Cardinals. He interviewed for the Raiders. I never once thought that any of those teams were going to hire him as their head coach. Like, Adam Schefter tweeted out this thing about, like, he was a hot commodity in the coaching circles as an offensive coordinator. The Ravens were, I thought he was going to go to Baltimore. If I'm being honest, I thought he was going to be the Baltimore Ravens offensive coordinator with Jesse Minter coming to town. There was a report that the Broncos were going to hire him as the offensive coordinator. Like, all these jobs that he was heavily linked to were offensive coordinator jobs. And now he's just been promoted to head coach. And if you've watched the Bills this past season, the offense was a big problem this year. And I know you can look at all the numbers, the underlying numbers and everything. Oh, my God, the Buffalo Bills, their offense ranked in this number for total offense, scoring offense, all that great stuff. If you watched the Bills play, the offense was not consistent in the slightest. Like, yes, they ranked fourth in the NFL in total yards. They ranked fourth in the NFL in total yards. They ranked fourth in the NFL in scoring offense. But that offense was not consistent at all. And you talk about like the joke on social media, like, oh my God, the receivers and all that stuff. Khalil Shakir, who's the Bills' listed number one wide receiver, his average depth of target, which is, you know, where he's getting the ball thrown to him at, in 2020, 13 yards. 2023, 8.1. 2024, 5.3. 2025, 3.4. Khalil Shakir, all things considered, has kind of just been turned into an extension of the running game. You remember how we talked about with Colorado last year, where or 2 years ago, last year, so 2024, when Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter were all there, they couldn't run the ball to save their lives. So they ran bubble screens. The wide receiver bubble screens was the extension of the running game because they couldn't run it up the middle because their O-line was so bad. And their running backs weren't great either. So your running game was bubble screens, which is why Shedeur Sanders' completion percentage shot through the freaking moon, because they're throwing a shit ton of bubble screens. And I've seen some people on Twitter talking about like, oh, Josh Allen's the most accurate during his time with Joe Brady. And this is why, again, I talk about like completion percentage not telling the whole story with accuracy. Because completion percentage, all it tells you is that the quarterback threw the ball and that the receiver caught the ball. That's it. It doesn't tell you where the ball was placed, if it was dropped, if the receiver had to make a crazy catch. Nothing that doesn't tell you anything. It doesn't tell you how accurate of a throw it is. It just tells you that the ball was thrown and the ball was caught. The Bills, again, ran a shit ton of screens and bubble screens this past season. Josh Allen had 69.3% completion percentage, the highest mark of his career. And yet, when you look at the last time he had a 69% completion percentage, which was back in 2020, he threw for 900 more yards. In that season, he had 12 more touchdowns, and he had the same number of interceptions. Like, my favorite version of Josh Allen was 2020 Josh Allen. That guy was ridiculous. Average, like, they were just so fun to watch. Pushing the ball down the field the entire game. And now it's kind of just turned into a glorified screen game. And a lot of that has to do with the weapons that they have at their disposal. And you look at some of the receivers that the Bills have on the roster. We've brought this up 1,000 times. But there's not a guy on here that you would look at and go, like, that's a true deep threat apart from Brandon Cooks. Tyrell Shavers would be that guy. But up until the back half of the season, Tyrell Shavers was mostly used as a guy they'd bring in for run blocking. He'd be the guy that would start out wide and they'd motion him inside to create a tight formation and then they'd run it off him. That was kind of what he got used for until, again, the back half of the season. The Bills' offense throughout the course of the season, again, I just got to keep reiterating this, was not consistent at all. Joe Brady's a young coach, but I don't think a lot of people out there would go like, oh, this is a young, up-and-coming, like, great mind on the offensive side of the ball. I think he's a good coach. I think he's a good coach. Do I say I hate this hire? No, but this hire just makes me feel like, bleh. Like, I don't feel positive, I don't feel negative about it, I just feel confused. Why would you go through all this process about interviewing people when you're just going to promote the guy that was already there? And they always talk about this, like, one thing the Bills talked about this offseason in regards to hiring a head coach was CEO. You had to be the CEO, they wanted a CEO-type head coach. What does a CEO mean to you guys out there? What if you're looking, thinking of the term CEO, like a boss and all that, what does that mean? That means they're the boss overseeing everything. They're overseeing it. They're not hands-on, but they're being overseeing everything. So with that, Joe Brady's going to be calling the offense. I don't really think that lines up with being the CEO. Like, that doesn't make, like, maybe I'm overthinking it again, but that doesn't really line up in my brain in regards to a CEO is now calling the offense. A CEO will call the offense if the guy they hired in to call the offense stinks at their job, but I don't really think the CEO would be calling the plays there. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So again, we talk about the Bills and their lack of consistency this entire offseason. I think it's that. It's more of that. And it frustrates me to that one. That's what frustrates me the most about it, is the lack of consistency and the fact that we were made to believe that they were going to go out and get an ambitious hire. They didn't even put in a time to interview Clint Kubiak. Kubiak's interviewing for the Raiders and Cardinals tomorrow, I think, or Sunday. I can't remember the exact day they said they were going to interview him. But, like, the Bills didn't even put in a request to interview him by a specific time, so now they would have had to wait till after the Super Bowl. So if you wanted to interview Kubiak, you have to wait till after the Super Bowl because you didn't put in the right timing to get everything lined up for the interview. Like, and if that was the case, again, you could have waited to hire Joe Brady after interviewing Kubiak, even if it was after the Super Bowl, because no one was going to hire Joe Brady's to be their head coach. Maybe Denver, because Denver fired Lombardi to be their offensive coordinator. I would just think that's a step to put Davis Webb in as the OC. I would love Davis Webb to come to Buffalo to be the OC. I don't know how likely that is at this point, but that's my dream move right there. But if you would have told, like, what did we talk about right after the playoff game? Or, well, I guess I interviewed, the show was right after the playoff game. But the people I talked to about, like, people talking about, oh, they're going to fire Sean McDermott, I didn't think they would. And I always said that, oh, we're going to, I think the Bills should look for new coordinators. And they did that with the defensive side of the ball. Bobby Babich isn't getting brought back as the defensive coordinator, which Bobby Babich, I had no problems with as a person. He'd been around the organization since 2017. He'd been around there since Sean McDermott was there. But he wasn't a defensive coordinator. Sean McDermott was calling the defensive plays the back half of the season. And now he's going to Green Bay to be the pass game coordinator, defensive backs coach or pass game coordinator on the defensive side of the ball. Pass game coordinator / secondary coach. That was the Bills' defensive coordinator, is now the secondary coach of the Packers. Because they just hired Jonathan Gannon to be the defensive coordinator. And I'm glad they did that, because I was of the belief that, oh my God, they're just going to bring back everybody. What this hiring tells me is that they were just tired of Sean McDermott. They were tired of the power struggles between Sean McDermott and themselves. And I think this move allows Brandon Bean to have utmost control of the organization in regards to football decisions and not having a coach like Sean McDermott, who, by all accounts, seems pretty hard-headed about what he wants from his players, from his team, what he wants on a team. And this allows that freedom for Brandon Bean to just continue to do that. And I'm going to remain optimistic, because all things considered, Josh Allen did win an MVP with Joe Brady, and James Cook did lead the league in rushing yards. So those are two positives that I have here. But I have said before that I don't even think the MVP Josh Allen is the best version of Josh Allen. But he did win an MVP with Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator. So there is that. But I don't know. It's a conflicting feeling that I've got going on right now. And again, I'm going to remain optimistic. But again, I would not have... This didn't really cross my mind as an option here. Like a real, real option. Maybe I had blinders on. Maybe I just didn't want it to happen. So I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be a realistic option here. But the connection to Josh Allen is very big. That's why I thought Dable, or I thought Davis Webb. Davis Webb could still come in. Can't rule that one out. And Jim Leonard, right now, seems to be the odds-on favorite to become the Bills' next defensive coordinator, because the Chargers, they just hired their defensive coordinator today, and they were the team that was really pushing hard for... They interviewed Jim Leonard yesterday, and they hired their defensive coordinator. So we'll see how Jim Leonard does. And he played for the Bills for a hot second. He played for the Bills for a hot second. The Ravens have requested to interview him, so we'll see how that one goes. But with the Chargers hiring their defensive coordinator, that opens the door for Leonard. If not Leonard, then the Bills can look at Raheem Morris as an option. They could look at Jim Schwartz, who people forget was in Buffalo for a hot second in 2014 before Rex Ryan came in and told him to get lost, and they brought in Rob Ryan. Jeez, fat old Rob Ryan. Goodness gracious. But Jim Schwartz, he was a good coach for the Buffalo Bills. Now, on Jim Schwartz, this one was kind of, I don't know what to call it. I don't know if it's funny. Let's just call it a very Browns move. It's a very Browns move. They hired Todd Monken to be the new head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Reminder, he was the offensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, but not only that, he was the offensive coordinator back in 2019 of the Cleveland Browns. He was the offensive coordinator of the 2019 Cleveland Browns under Freddie Kitchens. So this is Freddie Kitchens' first coach in his coaching tree to be hired, which I think that's pretty freaking hilarious. This is Freddie Kitchens' coaching tree. But you know what's hilarious? This is why it's such a Browns move. So the Browns offseason in general has been a mess in regards to getting a head coach. You had multiple coaches withdraw their names from the coaching search. Like, we talked about Yudinski. Mike McDaniel withdrew himself from the coaching search. Sean McDermott said, I'm not even going to coach this year. I'm going to take a year off. Like, they had these options for coaches, and then they just kind of backed off it because they had these ridiculous things they had in place for who they were wanting to hire, what they wanted the interviewees to do and everything. I don't remember what all it was. I don't remember. But regardless, people didn't want to go to Cleveland. People didn't want to interview for Cleveland. And at the end of the day, it went from Grant Diskin's the odds-on favorite to be the Cleveland Browns head coach. And then he withdrew himself from the organization, like from the coaching search. Then it was Nate Steelhouse is the favorite to be the head coach. And then it wound up being Jim Schwartz is the favorite. And then 2 days ago, it was Todd Monken out of nowhere. And then the next day, Todd Monken's hired as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. It went from Todd Monken. I had no clue Todd Monken was even in consideration to be a head coach anywhere. I had no idea. And then he got hired as the Cleveland Browns head coach. And I don't know if he's ever taken a head coaching interview ever prior to that. I mean, he did coach in college. He was a head coach in Southern Miss for a little bit. But other than that, has he ever interviewed for a head coaching job? NFL or college? Like, he left Southern Miss to be the offensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he was with the Bucs, and then he went over to Cleveland, and then he was with Georgia, then he went to Baltimore, all his offensive coordinators. Never head coaches. And then he was looked like, oh, he's going to go to Baltimore, because John Harbaugh, unless I've read this completely wrong, John Harbaugh pretty much got fired from Baltimore, or not just because of this, but one of the reasons is because he went and fired Todd Monken. So like, oh, Monken's going to go to Baltimore, or go to the Giants to coach with Harbaugh. And then now this happens. And then he took the offensive line coach with him to Cleveland. And in 2019, Monken pretty much just went on full blast the Cleveland Browns and talked about how unprofessional and how unorganized, how chaotic of a franchise they are. And the Browns still went out to hire him as the head coach. Again, it's a very Cleveland Browns move. And what's even funnier, while we keep going down this line here, is that I'm pretty sure they hired Monken because he said that he would probably keep Jim Schwartz on his staff, and they hired him, and Jim Schwartz gave him the double bird and said, I'm not coaching here no more, because Jim Schwartz wanted to be the head coach. He didn't want to be the assistant coach to Todd Monken, a guy who's never had head coaching experience in the NFL, something Jim Schwartz has. Regardless of how good he was throughout his time in Detroit, he at least has experience in that. And Jim Schwartz had been with the organization since 2023. And he's a good defensive coordinator. Again, whatever you think of him as a head coach, he did go to the playoffs with the Lions. Not a great head coach, but a lot more experience than Monken has. And they're the same age. So why would I want to be here as the defensive coordinator when I've been here for 3 or 4 years now as the DC, and now I'm wanting to be the head coach because there's an opening here? And then just you hire someone my age. No, I don't want to be here anymore. So it leads to the question again, why did the Browns fire Stefanski? Like, why? What was the point of firing Stefanski? Like, he would have kept Jim Schwartz there. Because you listen to players like Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward, and others talking about how important Jim Schwartz was to the defense. And now he's not going to be there anymore. And you hired Todd Monken. Todd Monken is not a better coach than Kevin Stefanski. I'm sorry. If the Atlanta Falcons hired Todd Monken to be their head coach, I think people would have been pretty upset. But I think Falcons fans, within reason, are pretty optimistic about Kevin Stefanski coming in as the head coach. No one would have done that for Todd Monken. And Browns fans, expectedly, are not the most hyped they've ever been in their life, they're not the most hyped. Like, let's just search Todd Monken and see what the first thing that pops up is. Apart from, Skip Bayless. That's Skip Bayless. We don't need to talk about what Skip Bayless has to say. I didn't even read the tweet. I saw it was Skip Bayless's face. We just scrolled past it. Oh, it's 2026, and my team hired Todd Monken to be their head coach, and it's a picture of Tommen Baratheon jumping out of the Red Keep. Things I am praying for as a Cleveland Browns fan after Todd Monken hired. Jim Schwartz resigns. They go 0-17. Players request trade publicly. I want Jimmy Haslam to feel absolute maximum amount of embarrassment and shame from the horrible decisions he continues, in all caps, to make. Reminder, they hired Hugh Jackson over Sean McDermott back in 2016. And that obviously went very well, because that's what Jimmy Haslam wanted. And obviously, maybe this will work out beautifully. I mean, they do have a Pro Bowl quarterback, so they do have that going for them right now. They do have that. They do have a Pro Bowl quarterback for you, which is just ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous on two fronts here. Because on one hand, Shedeur Sanders, after throwing 7 touchdowns and 10 picks, is a Pro Bowler in his rookie season. That's ridiculous in itself. But it's also ridiculous that nobody wants to play in it. Nobody wants to play in the Pro Bowl. Now, there has been some injuries on the AFC side of things, so that obviously doesn't really help anything. Like, Josh Allen's got a broken foot. Bo Nix has got a broken ankle. Herbert's been battling injuries all season. He got the broken hand and everything. Drake May is going to the Super Bowl. Trevor Lawrence, I think, already turned it down. Joe Burrow, I don't think, is going to go. I don't even know what the whole ramifications are for who hasn't said they'd go and who hasn't, but I know off the top of my head that at least 4 of them are battling injuries, or 3 of them are battling injuries, and one of them's going to the Super Bowl. So that makes things a little bit interesting there in that department. But in the year 2026, we are seeing Shedeur Sanders in the Pro Bowl and Bill Belichick not in the Hall of Fame. That's a pretty crazy thing that I did not expect to see happen. But I'm pretty sure I could, unless I'm completely wrong, I'm pretty sure Trevor Lawrence just refused to go or said he doesn't want to play, because Trevor Lawrence is a top 5 MVP candidate and he's not in. I don't know if they've released the alternates and stuff like that, but out of all the things I was expecting to see this year, I was not expecting to see Shedeur Sanders as a Pro Bowl quarterback. He wasn't good. There were moments this year against bad teams, but he wasn't good. He did not have a good rookie season, and now he's going to the Pro Bowl, which I think is, I again, it's sad that he's going, and it's sad that the Pro Bowl's in the state that it is, where that nobody cares. And it had been that way for a while, and I can include Josh Allen in this category as well, as nobody caring, because Josh Allen has refused to go to the Pro Bowl to play in the Pro-Am. So I'm including him in this in regards to, like, nobody cares about the Pro Bowl. And there's injuries and all that stuff, I understand. But it's still sad. There shouldn't be a reality where this is actually happening. And yet, here we are in the year 2026. This shouldn't happen. But you know what's funny? What's really funny is that the only Pro Bowl quarterback, with him making this, the only Pro Bowl quarterback that Kevin Stefanski's ever had as head coach is Shedeur Sanders. And Todd Monken is now going to go coach a Pro Bowl quarterback. So that's kind of hilarious. That's actually really funny. But Pro Bowl quarterback, Shedeur Sanders. That's hilarious. That's hilarious. And might as well just keep it in the AFC North for, like, I don't know if this is funny, but it's a very, when we talk about on brand for the Browns, this is very on brand for the Steelers. So they hired Mike McCarthy to be the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh guy, and now he's coaching another legendary franchise. He's been the head coach for the Packers, Cowboys, and now the Steelers. A lot of Super Bowls in those three organizations. Mike McCarthy obviously won a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers back in 2010, beating Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers there. And I prior to this, it was like, Chris Shula is probably going to get the job. Nate Shiloh might get the job as well. And Mike McCarthy kind of snuck up on there. everybody was kind of like, oh, well, he's from Pittsburgh, so it makes sense. Oh, they want to keep Rodgers, so it makes sense. But no one was like, oh, they're actually going to, that's the guy they're going to hire. Everybody thought they'd go with a young coach for as long as they like keeping young coaches there. Like Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin, all been there for thousands of years. Mike McCarthy's not a young coach. He's not a young coach. He became the Green Bay Packers head coach in 2006. Like, he's been there, he's been in the NFL for 20 years now. He ain't young. He ain't going to stay as long as Tomlin or Cowher did. Like, he's not, or Knoll. He's not going to stay anywhere near as long as those guys did. Maybe he does. Maybe I'm completely wrong in that. Maybe he does. But I really didn't see this coming, even though, again, I shouldn't be surprised. And I think this is just a move to make sure Aaron Rodgers stays. Which, again, this is why I'm talking about this is a very Pittsburgh Steelers move. Because instead of getting a younger quarterback, maybe they go and draft somebody still. Maybe they get Ty Simpson or something. They go out there and get one of those guys. But instead of just accepting that you're going to have to be bad for a year, you just are going to go down the same path again and hope a 42-year-old Aaron Rodgers comes back and plays for you. Like, that's what you're hoping at this point. That's the only reason you hire Mike McCarthy is because you want his relationship with Aaron Rodgers there. Which, maybe I've read this wrong as well. I never thought McCarthy and Rodgers had the best relationship. I never thought they had a great relationship. Because I'm pretty, like, Mike McCarthy was the offensive coordinator in San Francisco when they drafted Alex Smith over Aaron Rodgers. And I'm pretty sure Rodgers had some resentment for McCarthy for being on the staff that drafted the guy first overall instead of him. And at the end of their time in Green Bay, I don't remember there being a lot of sunshine and rainbows in regards to their relationship and how great it was. But now it's like, oh, Mike McCarthy's here, so now Aaron Rodgers is going to stay. And they asked Mike McCarthy that in the press conference. He's like, I don't see why not. I don't see why he couldn't stay. But that's a very Steelers move. It's a very Steelers and Browns move. You hire a guy in Cleveland who literally bashed your organization 6 years ago as the head coach, who's never been a head coach before at the NFL level. He's only been a head coach in college for 3 years at Southern Miss. And then the Steelers hire a guy who they're just like, oh, well, yeah, we're not going to exceed anything, but we'll make the playoffs and get blasted in the first round like we do every single year. Like, that's just what we're going to do. These two teams just cannot get out of their own way sometimes. And maybe Mike McCarthy's great for Pittsburgh. Maybe he's great. And apparently Chris Shula bombed his interview with the Steelers. So maybe it's for the best. But I don't know. It's just a weird couple hires. Weird couple hires. Now we're waiting for the Cardinals and Raiders to hire. It looks like Mike LaFleur is the Cardinals guy. Potentially Vance Joseph's still in that conversation. Clint Kubiak seems locked on to go to the Raiders. He seems like Tom Brady's guy. So we'll see if that happens. Maybe Davis Webb goes there. I don't know. But from Joe Brady to Monken to McCarthy, it was a really weird day for head coaching hires that I don't think a lot of people really expecting to see. But we'll see how it works out. As for Brady, again, I'm going to remain optimistic about it again. Josh Allen won an MVP. James Cook led the league in rushing. And I'm hoping as well that for some reason Sean McDermott had handcuffs on Brady and Brady couldn't be the guy that he wanted to be and what did this offense couldn't really be what it needed to be or what he wanted it to be is because Sean McDermott was telling him and restricting him on what he could do. So I'm hoping that's the case. I'm very hopeful for that. But I will believe it when I see it type thing, and I'm still not, like, the most, yes, they hired Joe Brady. That's not what I'm like. Because, again, I didn't think he'd be the guy they'd go after, but here we are. And I'm gonna back him, go into the new stadium, relationship with Josh Allen. That was another thing they backtracked on. They said Josh Allen be a part of the interviews, and they were like, ah, no, he was. I don't know what Josh Allen's role in this whole thing was because it hasn't been consistent. But, again, that's been the whole Bills the entire offseason. So we'll have to wait and see. The draft will be interesting to see what kind of player they go after. Zachariah Branch from Georgia seems like a Buffalo Bill, like a Joe Brady type receiver based off what they've been running for the past year and a half. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But I'm intrigued. I'm not pessimistic, but I'm not optimistic about this either. I'm just bleh. So we'll have to wait and see. But speaking on the draft, the Senior Bowl is this weekend. The Shrine Bowl was the other day. And Mark Gronowski, Iowa's own MVP of the Shrine Bowl, as everybody expected. Obviously, he was going to win the MVP. The GOAT, Mark Gronowski. But the Senior Bowl is, like, that's the big one. If you're like, no offense to the Shrine Bowl and all these other All-American Bowls and stuff like that, All-Star Bowls and all that. The Senior Bowl is the main one that people look at. And especially when it comes to quarterbacks. This year is not like the most fantastic for quarterbacks, but that's the entire draft at this point. Like, it went from going to a really good draft to now the Senior Bowl, we're kind of like, oh, this is kind of scary. Now, you look at the quarterbacks right now for the national team, you got Sawyer Robertson, Diego Pavia, and Cole Payton from North Dakota State. And then you look at the American team. Hold on, I got to load this up here. Look at the American team for quarterbacks. You've got the likes of Talen Green, Luke Altmyer, and Garrett Nussmeier. So it's, and apparently the quarterbacks have not been playing great. The guy who's been playing the best in the practices right now has been Cole Payton from North Dakota State, left-handed quarterback, stockier dude, typical North Dakota State quarterback, 6'2", 229, like typical North Dakota State guy. Diego Pavia, everybody knew he wasn't 6 foot tall. Came in here at 5'9", 198. He's been playing all right in these 7-on-7 things, but there's no, I don't see a reality where he gets drafted. I just don't at this point, because you're not going to play him in another position. You wouldn't draft a 5'9 guy to be your backup quarterback. That's just how I see that at this point. Like, there's going to be comparisons to Kyler Murray and Bryce Young in regards to like short quarterbacks that get drafted high and have success, whoever was successful in college and all that. In regards to talent, Bryce Young and Kyler Murray are stratospheres above Diego Pavia in regards to natural talent from the quarterback position. It's not even close. Like, the one they compare to the most is Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray was a four, he could run a 4.3 4.4 in the 40-yard dash and is one of the greatest athletes overall that we've ever seen at the quarterback position. I mean, this dude is, again, top 10 pick in the MLB draft. Like, I don't think it gets talked about enough how crazy of an athlete Kyler Murray is. And I'm intrigued to see where he goes. But in regards to the quarterbacks, I'm excited to see what Cole Payton can do. North Dakota State prospects, apart from offensive linemen, scare me because, again, of how dominant they are and how dominant they are up front. Quarterbacks, those that position scares me the most. When you're so dominant and you run the ball as effectively as they do, it opens up so many holes in the secondary that it makes life very easy for these quarterbacks. So I'm intrigued to see how he does here. He could be a 6th-round draft pick. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if he was that high. But Sawyer Robertson, I'm intrigued to see how he does as well. I like Sawyer Robertson. Back half of the season was not as good as the first half of the season, because the first half he was teetering around to like a top 8 guy in the draft class. And then he kind of just slowly started dipping off a little bit, as Baylor did as a team in general. So I'm intrigued to see how he does throughout this weekend as well. But looking at the American side, Garrett Nussmeier is the most high-profile guy here in regards to NFL draft status, because I know Diego Pavia was a Heisman finalist, came second in the Heisman race and all that stuff, and everybody knows Diego Pavia, but Garrett Nussmeier is the most NFL-looked-at guy in this draft class. From a ceiling-wise, Talen Green's a very intriguing guy to look at as well. I mean, he's 6'6", 229 pounds. Like, that's good size. He's a really good athlete as well. Still needs some work in regards to being a more consistent passer, but he's got all the tools to be a successful quarterback at the next level. It's just going to be intriguing to see what he does there. And Luke Altmyer is just a consistent guy. He's as consistent as they come. But Garrett Nussmeier, not the biggest guy in the world, but in regards to a pre-snap processing stuff, he's the most pro-ready out of all these guys. So we're going to have to wait and see on that. But looking at the rest of these rosters, it's not like, I don't even know what you really want to call it. There's some, like the thing you point to a lot of with these things is the quarterback position. That's the thing people will point to the most here. But you look at some of these guys like Malik Muhammad. We'll start up like corners. Malik Muhammad. Then you got Davison Igbinosin from Ohio State. Zion Young from Missouri. That's a guy I really like for the Bills. So we'll see how he looks in this game as well. He's looked good in the practices so far. TJ Parker's kind of reminded people that he's still one of those guys. Because prior to the season starting, people were looking at him as a potential top 10 pick. And as things stand right now, people have kind of backed off that a lot and said he might not even be a first-round draft pick. So that's going to be an interesting guy to watch. But he's kind of reminding people in this draft, in this Senior Bowl process, that he can still, maybe not a top 10 guy, but get him back into those conversations of being a top first-round pick. I saw, it was Matt Miller, I think, compared him to James Pierce in regards to that level of drop-off. Like, going from a top 10 pick to now, we might not see him in the first round, but he's still got that insane talent in there. We'll have to wait and see, though. But LJ Overton from Alabama is another guy in there. Caleb Banks from Florida. He didn't get measured or anything, but he's a defensive tackle from Florida, could be a potential first-round draft pick or early second-round guy in there. Then we keep scrolling down a little bit. I'm just touching on a couple of these here. I'm not going over everything here. Markel Bell, massive individual. He got blown up by, I can't remember who it was. He's a massive, he was Miami's left tackle. And it kind of got blown out of proportion because I don't know why he's here. He just played in the national championship a week ago. And now we're already back here. Now he's full pad practices, getting blitzed. Like, he hasn't had any time to, like, these guys have been getting ready for this and doing all that stuff. You go, like, oh, the game reps and all that stuff. But it's still a pain in the ass to go from playing in the national championship game, slugging it through the College Football Playoff, and just getting bull rushed at these games. It's very interesting. But you got Jay Knott, who remembers the transfer from Cal, went to Oklahoma this year. Mike Washington from Arkansas, I like him. He's a bigger back, 6 foot, 230 pounds, or around 230 pounds. Rasul Faison from South Carolina, he was a fairly solid back for them, even though South Carolina's rush offense was kind of inconsistent throughout the course of the year. I would say that was mostly down to their offensive line play, but he's a solid back in there. Adam Randall from Clemson. Kalen Black obviously rotated in with Hemby at Indiana, was a great player for them as they went on the national win the Natty. 5 foot nine, 208, not the biggest guy in the world, but a very solid guy there. Jalen Kilgore, safety from South Carolina. Kamari Ramsey, Michael Taffy from Texas. Sam Roush, tight end from Stanford. You got Josh Cuevas as well from Alabama, who had some very solid, like, wheel routes for Alabama throughout the course of the season. Very solid option there. And then you look at some of the wide receivers, Devin Vizin from South Alabama, Kevin Coleman from Missouri. You got Lewis Bond, Berrien Brown, solid season or solid enough receiver from LSU, Malachi Fields from Notre Dame, Ted Hurst, Aaron Anderson, another LSU guy, Jacoby Lane and Cyrus Allen. Jacoby Lane and Cyrus Allen are two guys, they're completely different receivers, but two guys I'm intrigued to see because I liked what I saw from Cincinnati and USC this year. Their quarterbacks trusted them. Jacoby Lane's a go up and get it guy, 6'4". Cyrus Allen's more of a speed guy, but I like both those guys at wide receiver. Looking over to the national team side of things, go over to positions as well. We look at Chandler Rivers from Duke at corner, Chris Johnson. You got TJ Hall from Iowa is also in there. And Colton Hood. Colton Hood's an interesting one. Had some inconsistencies this past year, and he had Jermon McCoy, didn't play due to the torn ACL. But Colton Hood's a guy that I could see going anywhere from top 15 to being he's going to be a first-round draft pick, but you also see him going in the top 15. Very good feat from a position, at the position. Max Llewellyn, defensive end from Iowa. Everybody knows him. Denise Sutton, another defensive end. He's from Penn State. Romelio Height from Texas Tech. Vincent Anthony from Duke. Keep scrolling down a little bit. Logan Fanu from Utah, sorry. Lee Hunter, defensive. I think he was the one that blew up the Miami dude. I can't remember, but Lee Hunter, he's a guy, again, that could sneak up into those upper echelon first-round draft pick guys. Like, we're already talking about top 25. He could be a top 20 pick when it's all said and done, after this process is all said and done. Zane Durant from Penn State. You got Drew Stevens as well, kicker from Iowa. Everybody knows Drew Stevens from Iowa. Then you got Bryce Bechter from Oregon. Scooby Williams from Texas A&M. Jacob Rodriguez from Texas Tech. He's also at the Senior Bowl this year. Then we've got, keep scrolling down, we got Jennings Dunker, the right tackle from Iowa, 6'4", 320 pounds there. Also got Bo Stevens from Iowa, another Iowa guy. I love seeing these Iowa guys in here. And I do like that it's the National American, because he used to be in the North and South teams. And I remember Justin Herbert was on the South team. And I don't know if you guys remember where he went, but he went to Oregon. So it didn't really make a lot of sense to put him on the South team, but that's not important. Then you got the Penn State guys, Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, the running backs. Didn't have the gears that a lot of us were expecting this past year, but still very solid backs there. Deshaun Singleton from Nebraska, VJ Payne from Kansas State. Keep scrolling down. Look at the tight ends here. Look at the wide receivers here. We got Trey Wallace from Ole Miss. We got Harrison Wallace, but Trey Wallace from Ole Miss. Solid receiver there. Josh Cameron, bigger receiver from Baylor. Then we've got Romelio Brinson, Jordan Hudson, Tyron Montgomery in there as well. So, again, these rosters may not have, like, the biggest names out there out of all the other years that we've seen the Senior Bowl here. And they're not going to get as much of attention just because of the fact, again, that, you know, it's the quarterbacks aren't great. This doesn't matter what year you look at, regardless of if it's a, I don't know. It's like if you look at all the skill position players, defensive players, D-line, quarterback, or offensive line, all those guys, you see those guys are good. But if you see the quarterback position kind of struggles, and it's not as deep as we've seen in previous years, then a lot of people are going to look at that and go like, oh, this is a weird, really weird draft class this year. And this year, I've seen people talk about there's like 15 to 20 players who have first-round draft grades on them. So we're just going to have to wait and see. In regards to the total draft, not quarterbacks, total draft. But yeah, I think that's all I've pretty much got for you today. I don't know if I've got anything else that I really want to touch on here, unless I'm completely forgetting about it. I think we're good to go. NFL Honors is next week, so we'll have all those predictions for you, more in-depth predictions. So we kind of sped run that the last time we recorded because those got announced while we were recording, so it kind of made sense to just go, oh, shit, yes, let's keep looking at this. Let's go over this real quick. But yeah, that's all I've got for you today on this edition of the Logan Blavatt Show. I do hope you enjoyed. If you did not, I sincerely apologize. Try to be better next time. Make sure to follow all the different links, the social media accounts that I mentioned before, blog post, loganblavattshow.com, subscribe to the YouTube channel, all that stuff. Apple Podcasts, Spotify accounts, make sure to leave a rating out of 5 stars on both. Leave a comment down below on why you feel the way you do. Of course, I've been Logan Blackman, your host with the most of the Logan Blackman Show. Again, if you enjoyed, awesome. If you didn't, I sincerely apologize. Try to be better next time, and I will see you guys later. Peace.